session number 27045, Relate.
Mr. Jacobs, Relate. Now, what about the... You mentioned... We were talking about the Far East Commission of HMS Belfast. What about this concert party activities you were talking about?
We started that as soon as we left the UK. They asked for volunteers for it, and so I always done a little bit of that in Sibby Street. And I went and offered me services. It was quite entertaining, really.
So, tell me about it. What were you actually doing?
It was a mixture of officers and the carried the Royal Marine Band, so they got involved. And we used to make up sketches. We had an opening chorus. It was based on a Ben You're Smiling. With the Belfast Follies, the Belfast Follies. Oh, 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 what a show. I give you laughter, we give you music. All you've got to do is sit and listen. If you think that life ain't worthwhile, cows about it, come on and smile at the Belfast Follies. Fast Follies, oh, oh, what a show. And then they'd be going to it when you're smiling, like it did in Ain't Half Hot Man, you know. And then up comes the what's-its and whatever. And you do sketches. Jack on a seat. Remember one of them, and he used to see a load of people sitting on a seat, and there's a lad-looking girl there, and a load of other people there, and old Jack comes along, he sits on the end of the beat, looks down the side there, and he sees the old girl, the young girl there, so he starts scratching, if he's lousy. And in the end, this bloke next door to him sniffs and turns his nose up and walks off, so he moves up one. See? So then he starts around doing the getting out, and this woman moves off. So then he gets up the next one, scratching, you know, farting and stuff like that. And he moves off. So he's left with a girl. And he thought, hello, and he starts scratching again. So she moves off, so he gets his bloody cat and gets his head down. It's one of them, I don't remember that. I don't know who wrote that. There's no words to it.
Were you a performer? Were you a performer?
Oh, yeah, a performer. I can only remember two of them, but I had more. Odes, like monologues, if you like. The sea was darker than stormy, the night was black as pitch. While the boys of 37 Miss lay talking in their mix. And then up spake Odie Roker, his face all white and pale, and said to Abel Seaman Carl, come tell us a seafaring tale. Old Carl made ne'er a movement, his eyes were full of thought. I tell you, lad, the best I can, about the war I fought. Way back 1939 when I first joined a ship. It was a broken down tub of 300 tons, but all the same a fighting ship. We were 3 days out from Gazmilab when we hit an icy storm. The icicles in the engine room near a place on the ship was warm. I was masthead lookout at the time, the water from me fairly dripped, when suddenly out of the darkness I saw what I thought was a ship. I strained my eyes to look closer, although they were aching with pain. I reported a fact to the skipper, and then cast my eyes back again. The ship now grew a bit plainer. I could see just her funnels and mast, and then I sighted her guns lead, and I knew we'd found action at last. The ship was a fast Jerry cruiser, but unsaunted we soon did give chase. We went in with both rifles blazing, the shells bursting all over the place. Well, our fire just chipped up her paintwork and splintered her deck quite a bit, when suddenly a terrific explosion told me the ship had got it. Well, the poor old ship, she couldn't take it. She was no more than a pile of old junk. We quickly took to the boats, lads, where we sat till she finally sunk. When I cast my mind back to that moment and the days we spent in that boat, I remember the lads that went with her, and a lump swells up in my throat. I remember old Scouse and old Geordie, and my winger, so young and so gay. I worshipped the deck the kid walked on. He got sippers from me every day. Well, those days are far best forgotten. Now, I've told you a tale of the sea. In heaven, you say you believe it, then you're a far bigger liar than me. One of them. Next one. Jatot. Warning. Sailors. Well, where does it start? Old Jack lay in his hammock out on the ocean's foam. His thoughts were far across the sea to the ones he loved at home. Of nights in low, he remembers those nights dearly, although so far away. He prays each night for his ticket when he'll go home to stay. Then he'll have no more putters, peas, no dried up meat or spuds. When he will wear a collar, you know, the ones that fits with studs, with no more uniform to wear, just a shirt and old flannel bags, and a couple of bob in his pocket just to play for his beer and his fags, then I ask you, is he contented? And you may say, Tip, don't talk Tommy rot. But believe me, there'll be something missing. You'll laugh when I say it's his tot. He's been drawing for 9 and 4 years now. The stuff is in his blood. He simply can't manage without it. It acts him just like a drug. He's now in a terrible quandary. The thought of no rum turns him white. The idea penetrates his rum-soaked brain and keeps him awake at night. But at last he comes up with the answer of a way to keep hold of his rum. You make the final mistake, boys, and sign for the full 21. So listen here, all you young sailors who just started drawing your tot. Give it up while you still have the willpower, or by heck, you're inside it will rot. So for the sake of your wives and your families, and take heed of what I'm going to say, have nothing to do with the stuff, lad, or by heck, you'll end up the same way. Boom, boom. They got to cheer that day. Woo, get him off.
Very good.
And I still want the Wren's wedding, but I didn't do that myself. Well, Jeff Woolley sings that, but I used to do it by reading. It's an old one from the Navy way back. But I used to do sketches and all and write them myself. And I used to do stuff with audience participation. Because if you get a sods opera, that's all audience participation. So you get something, you ask a question, and know full well the answer you're going to get, you know? And
where did you do the concert? I mean, which was it in the cinema?
We had a cinema above the ADR. It was part of the hangar, the top part of the hangar, where it's carried a seaplane, these seaplanes. They carried 2 seaplanes at one time. So the hangar was converted into the ADR, the upper deck mess deck, the cinema. And it was something else. The radar obviously is up there as well.
Now, what about the cinema? What would the cinema shows be?
Oh, don't tell me. When we got out into up in the Wangpu River, as I said to you, they had all ships for everything there. And I was very friendly because in the 293 cabin was just down the passage where the hatch was. Where the cinema operator used to get up into his caboose from that passageway and get in to project it. And I said, no, Nobby Clark, he was a torpedo man, nice little bloke from Nottingham. And one day I was up there talking to him, and a yank comes in and says, got any films to swap? So he says, you what? He's got any films to swap? She wouldn't like none of ours, mate. It's the Royal Naval Renters Films Company, about a year old, black and white. He said, besides, we've only got one projector. He said, we have to stop every so often. Is that all you got? He says, oh, I'll fix you up. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll pick up the parts and fetch you a new projector. And he says, I'll get some of the films and lend them to you. So he's good as he's bloody come up with a GB, bloody Bell and Howe, another projector, and he fetched the bloody films. I wouldn't remember them. They were, before they got to London, we was looking at the films straight from Hollywood. State Fair with Jeannie, and National Velvet, that film, saw that on there. And they used to change the films 2 or 3 times a week. Yeah.
So that was a popular thing. Now, what exactly were you doing when you got to Shanghai? I mean, what was going on?
I don't know, really. We did duties like on the jetty.
Tell me about that. What was that?
Well,
gangplank duty.
When your boats went ashore, you had to keep. The British, they never kept us. They kept us apart always because the Yanks didn't like the British and British didn't like the Yanks. So if you come ashore, you was either you were down river, and they were up river, just down the bottom of the Bund, Nanking Road. And if you was on jetty duty, you had to keep the jetty clear of Chinese because if you didn't do it. The jetty being there with bum boats, you know, unloading their stuff all over the shop. So had big gates to keep them out. And one day, it was at night time, this poor old rickshaw boy showed up and he was beaten up to buggery. And we managed to think to get out. The Yanks had beaten him up. He asked for his fare and he beat him up. So the PO said to us, a couple of blokes, he says, come up, we can't see the ensign. Up the Yankees. So he went up there. See the ensign on their jetty. And we had built in gates because there was no trouble then. And he told them what happened. We told this ensign what had happened and he was shocked. And he got a load of blokes round there and, you know, talked them into it. And in the end, he's got a set of blokes with grappling hooks. Oh, they threw his rickshaw in the river. That's what they'd done. Not only robbed him, you know, and beat him up, his livelihood went for the burden. Anyway, good as they were, they the blokes with boat hooks trying to get it out, and they took the hat round, and eventually he got the hat round, they got all this money, right? And I can always see this boat, his eyes are all bashed up, and he got this hat for the money. It must have been a fortune to him, you know. We got the communists at the bloody door. I went, when the communists come and they took Shanghai, they shot him, thought he was a bloody capitalist. Come all of that money, and he got, where do you have from? Ooh, bang, that's it. But they were like that, the Yanks, they didn't like anything said about them. No. It was deadly, because when we was up there, being the smallest fleet, we were outnumbered galore, and every time they saw us, they choose to pick a fight. So they had two watches ashore to even it up. But it never did.
Were you
did.
Involved in any fights with the US?
Oh, no, I kept well away. And the best way you could talk yourself out of that, because on their own, they're all right. But if you get the blacks playing up, you appeal to the generosity of the whites, Americans, and they sort them out for you. See? Play one against the other, and they do that.
Now, had you gone on to a peacetime routine yet?
Oh, yeah, yes.
Now, tell us, what was the difference between peacetime and war? Well, wartime, you were hardly underwater, but I mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Well, how did the ship change?
Well, part of the ship duties was polishing up all the time, tighten it up, shaving the decks off. I mean, they had the paint on the ship was a bloody... How many pounds of paint did they put on? They used to paint ship every 3 months. Get the old lot off and get down to bare metal and then bloody paint it up again. And they could do a lot of it with the superstructure when they were at sea. It's only when they get into a harbour that they really have to have a trouble with that. But then a little while later they took it into the refit down there in Singapore. But it was mostly tightened up. Except for the special sea duty men. They keep the ship going. The radar would get going if they needed it. The cooks, the administration people, they were doing their jobs. Stokers were doing their jobs. But
was it an easier life? Or?
Oh, yeah. Bloody dead easy.
Now, anything happened while you were at Shanghai? You seem to have been at Shanghai from September through to about December.
Yeah.
Anything happened?
Yeah, there's terrible things happened, really. It was cold. And conditions ashore were terrible.
In what way?
Yeah, because people had nothing, and they're running around in nothing. It was getting very cold. I mean, it's nothing to go ashore, get on a rickshaw, and you've got your sea boots and stockings on, and you say to their Johnny, Union Jack Club. You get between the shelves, and you had a pair of sandals on, a shirt, an hat. And by the time he got halfway up Nanking Road, he's sweating like an horse, you know, steam coming off of him. That's what it was like. And at the night time, when that's an 8-knot current there, and it can freeze over in winter, that's how cold it can get. So people fight at the night time, but an even chance of waking up. Get somewhere warm to sleep, you've got an even chance of waking up. And they used to go round in the morning, pick up the dead bodies, and it was nothing to see this barge go past the ship, going towards the Yangtze Bar. It's a bar of water, sand. You have to wait for the tide to get over it, so you can get into the Yangtze or get into the Wangpu. So they have to get these boats and dump the bodies over the Yangtze Bar, so they don't come back up again, you know? And the stink of them. And as I said, I was a quarter deckman then.
What did that mean?
Well, you sweep and do the quarter deck, and you scrub down every morning, get the scrubbing brushes out, scrubbing brush and a bottle of Holy Stone, and you get on your hands and knees and scrub the decks, like they did in Nelson's time. Wash it down with salt water, and then any ropes loose on the deck have to be coiled down, and all the cases, but everything's spick and span. Anyway,
so what happened?
I had a young bloke, only just come out, I can't remember his name. A P.O., what was his name? He was there, but he called a master, can't remember his name, mad sod. And he said to this young bloke, he says, get down that gangway, there's a bloody dead giant chink hanging around the transom down here. He says, get your boat hook and move him. He said, but don't take it too hard, he'll burst. And this young bloke was just an ordinary seaman then, and he's come out there. He took one look over the side, knocked his guts up. Well, it went all awful. Stink was terrible. Because they use that river for a graveyard, didn't they? Now, in China, they just stick the bodies in, let them row. And you got life cheap was cheap out there, it really was. You see, babies sitting their bare arse with a mug round their neck, and nobody was looking after them, and you're supposed to give money to them. But in the end, you get hardened to it because there's too much of it anyway.
So, was there anything else happened at Shanghai, the first visit, between September and December?
Well, nothing out of the ordinary, just.
You seem to have gone to Hong Kong then in December.
Yeah.
What do you remember of that?
Oh, it was all right. Yeah, we didn't have any trouble with the Yanks because they were in the minority. And the Yanks never got all night leave, and we did. So they used to have taxi dancing over there. And the Yanks used to go in there and pay for the girls to dance with them, buy them drinks. And after that time, they used to let the blokes, British Matlow, dance with them for nothing. They earned the money. But I tell you what, the girls out there, they, some of them were either Euro-Chinese or Euro-Asian. They were half-chats, as they call them. And their ambition was to marry a Matlow and become English, and raise her status in there, because they were second-class citizens in the colonies. The British National wouldn't bloody have them, and their own people wouldn't have them. So they were outcasts. And they used to worry about that, so the Matlows used to bloody get hold of them, and shack up with them, and change their names, change their tally, on the chat. And they come down to the British Centre, the China Fleet Club, looking for able seaman so-and-so. He's done a runner. And it was, I used to feel sorry for him. Bless Jack for it.
Anything else happened at Hong Kong?
No, not much. Not that time, anyway.
And then he seems to have gone to Sydney then, in February.
Yeah, I had some leave then.
I think you mentioned that before.
Yeah.
And then to New Zealand.
Oh, yeah. First place we stuck there was Napier. Right, Napier. I was fortunate enough to have a make and mend before we got there, so I got 12 o'clock leave. And they'd all, they decided we could have a march through the town. It's only a small little town, nothing big at all. And consequently, I was first ashore, and the only one ashore. And I was treated like, well, really something for me. And by the time...
What did they do for you?
Well, they put me in drinks. Then first time I realised it in there, the pubs, they give you a grub while you're drinking for nothing. I thought, this is good, bucks you each, you know, we're drinking. By the time the troops come through, all the, you know, band's playing, and I'm bloody, I'm drunk. I tried to stay in absolute, but it didn't make much difference anyway. I had a nice time, and people were very, very friendly. In fact, very, very friendly, and they were, but I found out right afterwards the reason why the town was so friendly towards us. And at the seafront there, they got a bell that belongs to HMS Snowdrop. In 1931, that was almost obliterated by an earthquake. And the first ship in there for relief was HMS Snowdrop. And that's why they had a feeling for the Royal Navy. And it was the first Royal Naval ship to visit there since the earthquake. So they really looked after us. But Wellington, we never got ashore at all. But Port Chalmers, we did. That was the seaport of Dunedin, as far as I know. And we did get ashore there for a long while. And Dunedin's done just like the Edinburgh of the South. It's got a Waverley, Princes Street, Waverley, Scots Memorial, the lot, because mostly the people a whaling stock, and they come out of Edinburgh. And they profess they're more English than the English themselves, and I believe it. And they decided to put, the corporation decided to put a civic do on. And it was in two halls. One was doing traditional dancing that they get used to, and the other was, you know, the old stuff we was used to. But I don't know where the beer came from, seeing it was had the same licensing laws as Australia. There was tons of beer in the bushes, and you didn't have to pay for it. You just come out and have a drink, you take your drink, and that's it. And had a whale of a time, and everybody was getting drunk, and I remember I was sitting down there and had a few drinks, and I used to carry myself a little bamboo whistle, right? And I'm sitting there playing, you know, off cut, playing my whistle. Because that used to be my finale for the concert party. I used to play trumpet voluntary on a Chinese flute accompanied by full Royal Marine Orchestra. And they used to go down them. Anyway, I'm sitting there fiddling around. This girl comes up, she's got a guitar, she starts strumming what I'm playing. Sorry. She starts strumming, and she says, oh yeah, she says, we make sweet music together. She said, well, yeah, we do, don't we? She says, what are you doing tomorrow night? So I says, well, nothing as far as I know. So she says, wouldn't like to come up and have some visit my parents, would you? I thought, yeah, up home, let's have some of that. So she said, well, meet me outside. I work for a little firm down the road there, Roses. Print firm it was. Meet me outside there at 5 o'clock. And to take you up there. Anyway, I got 12 o'clock leave again, didn't I? So I get shown at the lower courts, the pub on the dead jetty there. And they were legend, that man. They were served fried oysters. Never tasted them before, but they were lovely. Not dear either. And by the time I went outside her firm, I was free to the wind. She said to me, I can't take up home. You know what they like round here. One drink and you're drunkard, you know. So go to heaven. Go to hell. And she was of Scottish origins, Presbyterians. So she took me round her friend who had a little shop. And they're sticking black coffee and cashews down me, smelling me breath. And then about half past six, 7 o'clock, she said, yeah, right, we'll take you home now. And she lived up at a place called Lithgow. Big bungalow up there, Lithgow. No. Wasn't Lithgow, was it?
Doesn't matter.
Anyway. Anyway, big bungalow, and I met the family. And one of the things, she met her old granny. And she had the broadest Scottish accent I've ever heard, really. And she alone left Scotland when she was 3 years old. And she had a Scottish accent. We could understand that because it was a whaling station and they dialect they picked hold of. And she might make lace with bodkins on cushions, and she laid it and made all these elaborate patterns. I just remember she gave me 2 or 3 of them and I gave them to my mother when I come back. Anyway, Daddy came home. Nice fella, and I gathered that he'd been in Britain during the war, a pilot in the New Zealand Air Force. And anyway, we had a nice meal, one thing and another. And after we finished the coffee, he said, "Do you mind if Dennis and I go in the front room for a chat, man to man?" No. He came in there and he said, well, right, that's it. Do you like a drink? He said. I said, what? He said, do you like a drink? I said, yeah, of course I do. He says, oh, no, it's terrible round here. He says, I have to keep it in. I said, I can't really drink openly around here because, you know, you put the tag on you. He says, but I had a whale of a time in London, in England, during the war. I've got a soft spot for him. I said, funny you'd say that. I said, do you know your daughter spent 2 hours trying to sober me up?
So you had a good time ashore?
Yeah, oh, you had a good time ashore.
So where next, then?
Suva.
Where's that?
Fiji Island's capital, I think. Tied up alongside a jetty. And these big black coppers with serrated edge on their skirts, big fuzzy hair, and bare feet. And you get in a pub there with them, and they dog their fags with their bare feet. And they were about 6'3" tall, all of them. And nice fellas. You spoke English all right. And they played ship football. They played in their bare feet. But they broke some blokes at the shin. Yeah, true. And I always remember that because poor old Nobby Clark, he was only a short bloke, and when you were in those short trousers and the little singlet, and you looked like little boys anyway. And something happened ashore, and he had to go and identify the bloke who did it. So this copper called on board ship and asked for Nobby, and Nobby had to bring him marched away to the local shop to give evidence against this bloke. And as he was walking, he was 6 foot tall, he looked like his kid. It was terrific big. And, and the Padre, he organised a trip up into the jungle, and we met this chief. And in living memory, he'd bloody ate human flesh. He'd done it, but about 20-odd years ago, you know, he'd decided he wasn't going to do it anymore. And they still say that about when people pray with him.